The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Race to savings for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support you need with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome back to the show. This week, we're talking about the Fox platform, Mustang, LTD, Lincoln Mark 7. Why do these cars exist? Well, we're going to tell you. It was a calculated decision by the Ford Motor Company to save themselves.
Yeah, like most decisions made in the automotive industry.
Very calculated.
It was an attempt not to go out of business.
It really is. Just like it's just a rolling timeline of events where people are about to have catastrophic business misfortune.
And then they finally pull themselves out of the fire. And then they wait 10 years until they try to do it again.
They just never learn.
Yep.
Let's get into it. On October 7th, 1977, Ford officially launched sales of the all-new Fairmont. From the outside, it was nothing to gawk at, but its underpinnings laid the groundwork for a new generation of blue oval cars that would ultimately save one of its most iconic nameplates. The Fairmont was among Ford's initial responses to numerous challenges the auto industry faced on the heels of the muscle car era of the 1960s and early 70s. As an international fuel crisis rocked consumers, the US government issued fresh regulations related to new car emissions and fuel efficiency, all while competition from abroad forced auto engineers and designers to reconsider decades-old tactics. In 1973, Henry Ford II, or Hank the Deuce, had given the nod to company president Lee Iacocca to develop this new framework from the ground up. With many of the company's mid-sized vehicles riding on the 14-year-old Falcon chassis, the advanced platform had to provide a base not just for sedans, but coupes, wagons, and personal luxury cars from across the Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln lines. When the chassis went into production under the Fairmont, it was not immediately clear if it would be the foundation of success that the brand desperately needed in the midsize segment. Alas, the platform had a bigger mission: to chauffeur an all-new pony out of its stable. Why did this platform work so well? How did a Japanese-derived front-wheel drive car threaten to replace the Fox body Mustang? And what did the Fox say? Oh, f*** me. On this episode of Pass Gas, the tale of the development, launch, and legacy of Ford's Fox body platform.
Woo! That was an intro. Yeah. Nicely done, Nolan.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Technically, the Fox platform. I added Fox body platform. I know some of you more pedantic people are going to call me on that. It just flowed better out of my mouth for that, okay? Okay? Now that I'm done insulting our audience at the very top of the show, my name is Nolan Sykes. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you're a returning listener, and if this is your first time, I think this is going to be a good one. Across from me today is Bart Bidlingmeyer.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
And to my left is nobody, because Joe is actually sick today.
We've been spending the last, 2 months, whenever somebody couldn't be here, we've been joking that they got diarrhea and vomiting because they got the norovirus.
Yeah.
And Joe let us know he actually has the norovirus.
So
that's on us.
That is on us. So we are personally liable for that. and responsible.
Sorry,
ultimately.
Joe.
Yeah. So he'll be back hopefully next week. Hopefully, you know, I hope he's all right. I should probably check in with him after this recording, I think.
Okay.
Bart.
Yeah.
Fox platform, Fox body cars.
Yeah.
They're legendary.
They are. And I think
they're iconic.
I think they've, I mean, it's been no mystery, but in the last 10 years, maybe 15, I think people are kind of like, holy crap. You know,
definitely. I mean,
I think they're underappreciated when they hit the market. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just such a good looking car that,
yeah,
you know, we want them back.
And I think in the early 2000s or the mid 2000s, however you want to slice it, that's when like the popularity of the Fox body Mustang mm-hmm. really started exploding again. Cause, yeah, you know, there was a vibrant aftermarket mm-hmm. for that platform, especially in the drag racing space.
And I'd also say that you'd been spending about 10 years looking at the one of the worst versions of the Mustang.
The SN95, the New Edge Mustangs.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are coming around in those, not in the same way today.
They are in I just looked when I remember thinking of how ugly they were and just like, man, you guys ruined a legacy that you had almost gotten back. But if you look at it now, there's something there.
I like the New Edge ones, like the more kind of blocky of the SN95s, the more mm-hmm. angular ones. Those are pretty sweet. My buddy Dimitri has a really cool Celine SN95 clone mm-hmm. that he's built, and it's awesome.
The Celine Mustangs of that era look mm-hmm. pretty cool. Those body kits and suspension and wheels,
they're sick.
Were beautiful.
But we're going to be talking about the predecessor to those cars. Again, mm-hmm. not just the Fox body Mustang, though. There's a lot of them. My favorite being the LTD, the four-door sedan.
The precursor to the Lincoln Town Car, but also why am I blanking on the
Crown Vic?
Ford Crown Vic.
Yeah.
Why did that elude me?
Like, but dude,
that girl waving her trophy at the stink contest. But you're right. It was the
Ford
Crown
LTD Fox body. There was, I remember, dude, we went to, you and I went to Radwood
mm-hmm.
a couple years ago, and there was a really sick LTD there. And ever since then, I'm like, that's the Fox body for me.
Yeah.
It was badass though, man.
Yeah.
It was real badass. Anyway, I'm sure we'll get to that and plenty more in this episode. How about we get
Let's do it.
President Lyndon B. Johnson may not be the first person that comes to mind when considering automotive engineering.
He should be the first person who comes to mind when you think of having to call Hager and ask them to adjust the pants so that you can fit your big old balls in them.
Yeah.
It's got look that up. There's a recorded phone call.
But see if you can't leave me about an inch from where the zipper ends, around under my back of my bung hole.
Yes, he had a big dong. But
he didn't complain about. He complained about.
Oh, the balls.
He was like, it's like it's chopping my balls in half.
Oh,
look up the Lyndon B. Johnson calls Hager, and you'll be like, this guy something.
He was something else. LBJ. But on December 17th, 1963, Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Clean Air Act. Johnson. It's a fitting last name.
Again, it wasn't his Johnson.
I know, but like,
it was his. Yeah. You're thinking of Lyndon B. Scrotum.
He signed the Clean Air Act into law, a resolution that aimed to limit the pollution of stationary exhaust sources. While this particular law did not target the car industry, it did scare people working in it enough to begin lobbying against regulations before they ever existed. And they were right to fear the man. Subsequent acts in 1967 and 70 laid out new laws that automakers would have to abide by when it came to emission standards. In an era of high horsepower American land yachts and cheap gasoline, the thought of regulating what came out of tailpipes seemed downright absurd, Bart.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, after all, wearing seatbelts and driving sober were little more than suggestions. Why would exhaust fumes be any different? That reminds me. I was going to issue this correction on Big Three, but we talked to Antron Brown, mm-hmm. didn't get the chance to. Last week or last time on the Big Three, we were talking about that speed governor law.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know how I feel about it, blah, 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 some ill-reasoned BS about freedom of movement and stuff like that. Yeah. I was in a mood that day. And later that day, Kevin Clayland over on Instagram hit me up. He said, yo, dude, like, people who repeatedly speed and put others' lives in danger clearly can't be trusted to not speed and put other people's lives in danger. And I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
That
and,
was.
And we, like, I think 70 miles an hour is not nothing.
It's not.
Especially
that
if
slow.
You're a guy going 120.
Yeah.
Buddy.
So cool. I was an idiot. And thank you, Kevin, for hitting me up with that. Because, yes. Anyway. We're on the topic of laws.
We're on regulations. Yes. Governmental regulations.
Continuing on, as Congress considered the Clean Air Act of 1967, Lee Iacocca, then of Ford Motor Company, voiced his opposition, asking Congress, quote, this is a
how
dumb...
much clean air do we need?
Come on.
That's a great quote, though.
That's a hilarious quote.
Talking about devil's advocate. You know?
Yeah,
come
dude.
On.
How much clean air do we really need? Wow, that is insane. Mm-hmm. It turns out you need at least some. But emissions regulations were not the only issue inspiring American automakers to consider thinking small, unlike Lyndon B. Johnson.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Race to savings now at Menards. We have what you need to give your bathroom a fresh, updated look. Shop Menards' great selection of bathroom products from American Standard. No matter the size of your bathroom, American Standard offers a superior line of toilets, faucets, and more. Complete your bathroom update today with American Standard. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Now back to the show.
By the early 1970s, one could no longer deny the competition from imported cars, including Toyota, Honda, and Volkswagen, which had certainly influenced a generation to think small for themselves. They had good cars.
Yeah.
They had good cars.
Fun little cars.
Additional blows came in 1973 when the Environmental Protection Agency released its first set of data surrounding fuel economy. This gave consumers new information about their vehicles and also paved the way for setting corporate average fuel economy standards, or CAFE. Then, in October of that year, the gas crisis hit, sending fuel prices from an average of 39 cents per gallon in 1973 to 59 cents per gallon the following year. That's an equal jump from $2.77 to $3.78 in $2025. So, big jump. Despite efforts to closet the importance of fresh air, Iacocca couldn't help but notice a shift in the winds, government mandated or not. A new platform would be needed to ensure Ford could meet these new regulations and compete on a global scale. Of utmost importance, the platform must be adaptable, allowing multiple vehicle types to ride upon it to reduce production costs. During initial planning, it was determined that the new system would replace the aging Falcon architecture. Besides the Falcon itself, which saw production from 1959 to 1970, other Ford Lincoln Mercury vehicles to use the platform included the Mustang and the Cougar pony cars, the Ford Econoline, no kidding, the Falcon van and Club Wagon vans, you had the Ford Maverick, the Mercury Comet, and the Lincoln Versailles, or we probably call it the Versailles.
Versailles if you're from Kentucky.
Yeah, luxury sedan. It was heavy, relied on body-on-frame construction like a truck, and was severely outdated when it came to handling. and ride comfort. With the A-OK from his boss, Hank the Deuce, Iacocca officially approved development of a new platform that would tackle Ford's concerns by creating the framework for a world car that could support its automotive markets around the globe. This quickly proved to be more difficult than presumed.
And remember, this is also, let's remember, coming off the heels of the Pinto.
Yes.
Which also Iacocca was also pretty heavy-handed in. As Ford began research, it soon became known as the Fox platform, in partial reference to the Audi Fox it had hopefully compete with.
Really?
The initial plan saw Hal Sperlich's product planning and research group attempt to build a short wheelbase and a long wheelbase version that had prioritized downsizing and efficiency.
Hal Sperlich.
It would be necessary for the platform to be able to host a variety of powertrains to support FOMOCO's entire line of mid-size vehicles, as well as a planned sport coupe. Or coupe. Having spent time as VP and special assistant of Ford Europe, Sperlich leaned on Ford's engineers across the pond to develop the new platform that would be based on existing European subcompact designs, with the goal to have the short version replace the Pinto line in North America and the Cortina and Taunus lines abroad. And the longer wheelbase would carry personal luxury cars from both Ford and Lincoln. And the ultimate prize would be ease of international manufacturing. Hmm. Numerous roadblocks soon popped up in the form of multi-jurisdiction regulations and production methods. Who saw that coming? The plan to build a world car faltered, but development of the Fox platform continued in the States, remaining a multiple wheelbase foundation. To bring the project home, the Fox was handed off to Ford's North American Automobile Operations Group.
You know, it probably was just like the trying to balance multiple rule books at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it is amazing to me how some things just do not work.
Yeah.
In certain markets that work.
Yeah.
Other places. Yeah. You know?
Ute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being one of them, I guess. Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, I hear you. Lest we forget the Euro market, Sperlich's group had been working on a small vehicle codenamed Bobcat, designed to replace the European Escort, which held a minimal market share on the continent, particularly south of France.
Hmm.
In the south of France or south of the country of France, do you think? That's because that's ocean. All right. After Henry Ford II secured a new manufacturing plant in Spain to build more Escorts, Sperlich revealed the Bobcat to the board. Before long, it was agreed the Bobcat should be produced in the new plant. Final result was the Fiesta. Ford's first successful front-wheel drive car sold in multiple European countries. Its first front-wheel drive car ever came in 1962 when Ford launched the Taunus in Germany. While the Fiesta would prove fruitful, Sperlich, however, found his days at Ford numbered. His aggressive styling practices and particular push for a minivan would lead him to be fired by the end of 1976. He soon made his way to Chrysler and, you guessed it, brought the minivan idea with him. He'd ultimately end his automotive career as president of Chrysler upon his retirement in 1988.
Well, that's crazy because Iacocca also went to Chrysler and like helped make the minivan a thing.
Yeah, I bet they both got there and they were like, hey, remember us from Ford?
Remember this great idea we had?
By the end of 1975, engineers in Detroit began to hone in on the final draft of the Fox. With focus placed on drivetrain flexibility, the rear drive front engine framework would utilize unibody construction, unlike Ford's larger vehicles of the era. However, one of the biggest differences between a Fox and a Falcon
was that one has wings.
Was the use of strut front suspension as opposed to the high-mounted coils and shocks. This resulted in a wider engine bay, allowing the chassis to accept a transverse-mounted engine as easily as it would a V8. Disc brakes were paired with the McPherson struts up front, while base model Fox cars would receive drums out back with a live rear axle suspension setup. More sporty models that had come later down the line would be fit with four-wheel disc brakes.
Hmm.
With the platform now configured, Ford married it to its first production partner, the all-new Fairmont, and its Mercury brethren, the Zephyr.
The Ford Fairmont. I was just thinking...
The Zephyr, I think, is actually kind of a cool-looking car.
Mercury Zephyr.
Yeah.
Oh, the later one. Yeah, that's right, because they made the Zephyr all the time. I kind of like that too, Bart.
Yeah.
I like that.
And if you're talking about Fairmonts, you can't talk about 77 Fairmonts without the Fairmont GXL. But I have a feeling we'll get to that.
Fairmont GXL. Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, that is actually pretty sick.
I know.
Yo. That's fun looking. That's interesting.
Right?
Oh.
It's got little hood scoops. It's got... Yeah. Intake vents on the hood?
Hell, I've never seen one of these before. This is like a very Australian looking car.
Yeah, well.
On October 7, 1977, 3 months after Henry Ford II famously fired Lee Iacocca from the presidency of Ford, scared that he was going to take over the family business, the Ford Fairmont officially went on sale. Iacocca would later reconnect with Hal Sperlick at Chrysler to build the cars that would combat these vehicles they helped conceive. The Fairmont became the first of 15 distinct vehicles to ride on the Fox chassis.
I also want to shout out, if they got back together, I'm sure that they were doing the Charger. Remember that, the little hatchback and stuff? That's got to be Sperlick and Iacocca.
Probably, yeah.
That's just conjecture.
Or is it?
I mean, it is. Yeah, I'm just guessing.
About a month later, a significant car came off the line on November 15th. The special cream-over-gold 1978 Ford Fairmont Futura Coupe earned its place in automotive history as the 100 millionth car ever produced by the FOMOCO.
It does not look good.
It looks like a car. In 1979, Ford released a companion platform named Panther. The V8-only body-on-frame system initially carried the Ford LTD and Mercury Marquis. Oh, so it wasn't a Fox. It was a Panther. With the Lincoln Continental arriving on the Panther framework for 1980. Though Ford had planned to discontinue the system by the late 80s, it proved sufficient enough to carry vehicles for 33 model years. The end of the Panther line came in 2011 when production of the Ford Crown Victoria ceased.
We'll be right back after these messages.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Now back to the show.
The Fox platform expanded in 1979 with the introduction of the third generation Ford Mustang and its Mercury twin, the short-lived Capri. Numerous historians, enthusiasts, and journalists point to this new Mustang as the saving grace of the original pony car, replacing the gutless Mustang II that carried the nameplate through the 1970s energy crisis. The Fox body Mustangs, as they are known today, sat 4 inches longer than its predecessor. Though the horsepower rating of the 5-liter remained the same of that as the last Mustang IIs at about 140, an upgraded fuel delivery system and lighter chassis helped drop the car 0 to 60 to just 8.3 seconds, a full second faster than the 1978 Mustang II King Cobra. I like these King Cobra Mustang IIs. They're pretty sick. If you found a real clean one and rolled up to work in that,
I don't know if you could.
I probably can't. The Mustang was back, baby, with many thanks awarded to designer Jack Telnak and his team. In his early years at Ford, he faced the task of designing the original Mustang's wheel covers and shaped the design of the fastback variant. That's pretty cool. Now he's making this one. While Telnak looked to the 60s for inspiration, the overall design of the Fox Mustang is heavily influenced by European cars of the era, as were many Ford products back then. Before being called upon to pen what would become the new Mustang, Telnak served as VP of design for Ford Europe, and his recruitment for the Mustang was no accident. Ford saw the Euro-inspired second-generation Camaro as its biggest threat and wanted to give its pony car a similar treatment. While the generational crossover would only last 2 years between the competitors, the new Mustang soon faced a new threat. A threat called front-wheel drive technology.
I love this. We should do just a Mustang versus Camaro. Because that rivalry is just super epic.
Yeah.
You know, and
I agree. We should do that.
Anytime one of them like gets a revamp, somebody, oh, what are we going to do? We got to do even better.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. You know? Throughout its decade and a half run, the Mustang rolled off assembly lines alongside numerous other Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles, all sharing that platform we talked about. One of the most interesting and rare of them is the Ford Durango. Though not an official production vehicle, the Durango set out to create the successor to the Ranchero.
Mm.
Conceived to compete with the recently downsized El Camino, Ford commissioned National Coach Works of L.A. to convert Fairmont Futura coupes into coupe utilities. Isn't that what I was just
saying?
That's
what you literally just said.
Okay. That should be pretty easy to do then. National Coach Works retained rights to sell them at Ford dealerships and did so in extremely limited quantities between 79 and 82. The best guess anyone has as to how many of these Fox Body Utes were built is just 212.
Dude, and we are looking at a picture of one.
This,
I don't think this is...
That looks great.
It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if this is just a Mustang with a bed on the back that someone made.
And just called it that?
Yeah, because...
Mustang Fox Body.
I don't know. That's really sick, though.
You can't see the other angle. It was on a power tour. What is that, in
2003? 2003. Wow. That's really cool, though.
Damn.
Yeah. Man, wasn't I just talking shit about El Caminos like a month ago?
Well, I think we were just saying they just never, we liked the El Camino, but they never took a cultural hold here because they only were around for a little bit.
I don't know. I think I was mad about some El Camino being sold for like $17,000 and was like, that is misplaced nostalgia. But dude, if there was like more of these things on the road, like besides just the El Camino and Ranchero.
Yeah. I agree. I think people would flock.
Man. Yeah.
Beyond this outlier, the versatile platform carried many of Ford's bestsellers of the era.
Put some jump seats in the back, dude.
Model year 1980 saw the launch of the 8th generation of the Ford Thunderbird and the 5th gen Mercury Cougar, badged as the XR7. With the Cougar now far removed from its origins as an upscale Mustang, the Big Cat and the T-Bird represented the first personal luxury cars to use the platform, riding on the long 108.5-inch wheelbase. Interestingly, in 1981, Ford also applied the Cougar nameplate to the four-door sedan and five-door wagon, with those riding on the shorter 105.5-inch wheelbase. The Cougar sedans and wagons only survived through 1982.
Mm.
The 9th-gen T-Bird and 6th-gen Cougar appeared for 83 on the 104.2-inch wheelbase. This left the longest edition of the Fox to Lincoln, who used it for the Continental from 82 to 87 and the Mark 7 from 84 to 92.
I do like those Mark 7s.
I like the Mark 7s too. All right, to round out the list of models that occupied this Fox territory, you got the 81, an 82 Ford Granada, which was then replaced by the Ford LTD Mercury Marquis in 1983. Those would only live until 86, when the front-wheel drive Ford Taurus and Mercury Sables, also designed by Telnak of Fox Body fame, hit the market with profound success. In 1966, General Motors gave America its first mass-produced front-wheel cars since about the 30s, when they released the Oldsmobile Toronado. It took another 15 years for front-wheel drive to start being favored in American automotive production. Revered as a lighter, more efficient approach to producing and operating passenger vehicles, Chrysler led the way when it came to using front-drive cars to meet fuel economy standards with the launch of the 78 Plymouth Horizon and Dodge Omni.
Mm-hmm.
GM followed suit in 1980 with the Citation.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And remember that world car Ford aimed to build?
I vaguely.
It sort of came to market in the form of Ford's first North American front-wheel drive offering. In 1981, the Escort.
Mm.
This Pinto replacement rode on Ford's CE14 platform, but the Escort of North America shared no body parts with the Escort of abroad. In fact... The World Car Program failed in nearly every sense, with the only major component shared between the domestic and Euro versions being drivetrain options. When it came to efficiency in terms of both manufacturing and gas mileage, front-wheel drive ruled the road. In the early 1980s, facing bankruptcy, Chrysler took a leap of faith when it launched the K-Car platform in 1981. Though the K cars had been in the works before his arrival, Lee Iacocca, now at the helm of Mopar, directed Chrysler engineers to maximize the number of components shared across the models in the platform. The result was a vehicle that could be sold at a low price and retain profitability. If you want to learn more about Lee Iacocca's time at Chrysler, check out the three-part series on Dodge.
Yep.
Its success illustrated the financial brilliance of building front-wheel drive cars at scale in the U.S. A year after the K-Cars debuted, GM launched its new front-wheel drive A platform, which supported the Chevrolet Celebrity, Pontiac 6000, Buick Century, and of course, the Oldsmobile Cutlass Sierra.
Oh, you gotta have that.
Yep. That same year, 1982, Ford's front-wheel drive line grew to include the Escort, derived EXP Sports Coupe, the Ford Tempo, and the Mercury Topaz. The Taurus and Sable followed in 86, and in 1988, Lincoln moved the Continental to a front-wheel drive platform. This left only the Lincoln Mark 7 and Ford Mustang riding on the Fox. By now, rear-wheel drive platforms across the world were being primarily reserved for SUVs, trucks, large luxury sedans, and sports cars. However, even the Mustang would see its rear drive platform come under scrutiny.
Oh, no, dude. Oh, I don't like this part of the story, dude.
Dude, you want to take a ride in my front-wheel drive Mustang? Dude, it got a little squirrely when going in a dang old corner and won't steer right.
The third-generation Mustang underwent a number of transformations, all supported by its Fox underpinnings. Its varying trim levels, body styles, and powertrain combinations made it a sports car for everyone, much the way the original version of the car had. The first iteration, available as a base model in the upscale Ghia trim or with the Cobra appearance package, could be had with a 131-horsepower turbo 4-banger or 139-horsepower 302 V8, marketed as the 5.0. Transmissions included a 3-speed automatic or a Borg Warner 4-speed stick.
I just love seeing the 5.0 on the Mustangs. And I also love knowing that when it came out of the factory, it was 140 horsepower.
That's pretty good. In a blow to the pony department, a 118 horsepower 4.2 liter V8 replaced the 302 the next year. And by 1981, an inline six option was added to the list, and the four on the floor fell in favor of a 5-speed Tremec, baby.
Yeah, you don't see many Mustangs with that 4.2 badge on them, though, do you?
No, I've never heard of that. That's crazy. The reintroduction of the Mustang GT after a 13-year absence was met with great enthusiasm. Featuring a revamped Windsor 302 making 157 horsepower this time,
paired with an available Tremec 4-speed, GT Advertising in 1982 proudly proclaimed, "The boss is back!" And with that, the Cobra appearance package disappeared for now. It would seem the Mustang team had something fresh up their sleeve for every new model year. In the first few years of the third gen, engine options came and went. And after a brief hiatus, the four-cylinder turbo returned, now with fuel injection, giving it 145 horsepower. Though the turbo was a GT option, it didn't sell well, given it cost more than the V8 and produced 30 less horses.
Boo. You suck.
For 1984, Ford honored its past with the introduction of a 20th anniversary Mustang badged as the GT350. If you wanted it with a stick, you got a carbureted 5.0, brother, while automatics received the new electronically fuel-injected version. That year also saw the birth of the Mustang SVO, short for Special Vehicle Operations, which was Ford's performance division. While its 2.3 turbo four-banger initially produced 175 horses, it'd be kicked up to 205 halfway through 1985. This marked the first time the Mustang had more than 200 horsepower since 1973. The malaise era of automaking seemed to be coming to an end. Or was it?
By the mid-1980s, it was more than apparent that front-wheel drive would be the future of efficient automotive production in Detroit and far beyond. At Ford, lines were drawn when a proposition appeared to give the Mustang a front-wheel drive makeover. Despite the internal rebuke, leadership moved forward with the plan in secret, believing the badge to be strong enough to support the cost-saving measure. While the current Fox Mustang stayed the course, engineers set a new path for its successor. But unfortunately, or fortunately,
depending on who you talk to,
someone spilled the beans.
Ooh.
In the April 13, 1987 edition of Auto Week magazine, writer Christopher Sawyer revealed Ford's plans, and they were not well received. The report, which included illustrations, gave details of what was supposed to be an all-new 1989 Mustang. What fell on those pages infuriated fans of the car. Codename, the XT16. It featured a Mazda-derived front-wheel drive platform and lacked a V8 option.
Wow.
Furthermore, word came that Ford would phase out the Fox Body Pony car as the Mustang Classic before having the XT16 replace it in totality.
Dude.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Chris Sawyer was so stoked about story and the fact that he got it.
Yes.
That's a good time.
Hats off. And also, he saved the Mustang,
helped save it,
right?
Yeah. Very cool.
Angry letters began to pour into Ford and automotive magazines by the thousands. I like the idea that it's like, no, I'm going to write the magazine.
Yeah.
You know, he's just reporting it, guys. Yeah. Don't blame the messenger.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In response to the effort to replace the Mustang with a front-wheel drive car built on a Japanese chassis, Ford engineer manager John Coletti quipped, "I would rather have seen the Mustang name die." Well, Coletti would be called upon to ensure that did not happen when the higher-ups realized their misdeed. They charged him with saving the pony. To do so, he would return to the Fox platform. The ST-16, the car destined to be the new Mustang, wasn't killed off, though. It debuted in 1989 as the Ford Probe.
Yes.
Yes, the Mustang was very nearly replaced by the car that became the Probe. If you're mad about the Mach-E, just think about what could have been.
I mean,
Probe wasn't a bad car.
I like the way the Probe looks. I think it's a cool looking car.
It's not a Mustang.
It's not. It's not. I remember my neighbor when I was growing up had one. They were down the street and
we're still talking about a Ford Probe.
Yeah. Not a Probe.
Probe. Okay.
No, they had a Ford Probe. I liked the way it looked a lot. I thought it was like, as a 7-year old, I was like, this is a cool ass car, dude. Yeah. Just it has a very pointy shape.
Yeah, it's very deliberate.
Yeah.
You know it? Yeah.
It's nice. Alas, the writing was on the wall for the third gen Mustang. John Coletti set up a skunkworks crew to save the Mustang. But with so much time and money spent on the Probe, his budget sat at just $550
million. Only $550
million? This being about half of what a normal new car program cost in the day. That's insane. The goal soon came into focus.
This is explaining a lot of what happened to the 90.
Yeah, it really does. A new look, a V8, affordable and fun, all while meeting current regulations. The only way to do this with the allotted money? You got to rebuild the Fox. In 1992, as development of the fourth generation Mustang steamed ahead, the production of the only other car using the Fox platform, the Lincoln Mark 7, came to a close. The end of the line came shortly thereafter for the third generation Mustang, the last one rolling off the assembly line on August 26, 1993. However, it wasn't the end of the Fox platform. On December 9, 1993, Ford officially launched the fourth-gen Mustang. Colletti, now director of the special vehicle team that included designers Bud Magaldi and Emmeline King, had successfully built upon a revamped Fox platform. Internally known as the SN95 Fox 4, the new generation was popularized simply as the SN95. The refreshed platform carried over several components, including the floor pan. However, the SN95 had improved rigidness, it had new suspension and anti-roll bars, and its track was widened by 4 inches up front and 2 in the back. The platform remained versatile in terms of the engine and transmission options it could carry, though its use was reserved purely for the pony car. With Ford doing away with the four-banger in the Mustang, power options now range from the 3.8-liter V6 up to the 5.8-liter 351-cubic-inch V8. That's what I'm talking about. The SN95 Fox 4 remained in production from late 93 until May 10, 1994, officially marking the end of the Fox platform after a 26-year run. That's all it... Oh, yeah. Wow. The DC2 platform took its place, and the Mustang underwent a retro redesign for 2005. The SN95 Fox 4 remained in production from late 1993 until May 10, 1994, officially marking the end of the Fox platform after a 26-year run. As far as the Mustang is concerned, we all know what happened after that. While long overlooked, Fox body Mustangs, particularly 5.0 models of the late 80s and early 90s, have been experiencing a phoenix moment in recent years. I would say recent decades, honestly. Yeah. With badges reading Celine and Cobra, the finest examples often trade hands for upwards of $50,000. Good Lord, it's a nice one. So if you want a Fox without breaking the bank, we suggest looking beyond the pony cars and getting yourself a Lincoln Mark 7.
I don't want people to do that because I'm about to.
Yeah, actually.
I don't want they're to cool. Drive it to
I kind of like those,
up.
Dude. I'm into them. All right, we got some listener mail this week. I'm going to be reading it because Joe's out, but also this one concerns Bart.
Hey.
Yeah. The subject line, longtime Bart fan from New Zealand. Dear Nolan, Joe, and Bart, I've been listening to your podcast since day one. In fact, I've been watching the channel since Nolan was a little brother doing news in the hallway and some fella named James was shouting at me and Bart had...
Remember your news show?
Yeah, dude.
And that's then we were
OG
like,
fan,
we
dude.
Can't do this
yeah,
every day.
I was dying, dude. OG fan, man. And Bart had this little show named Science Garage. I have wholeheartedly enjoyed Bart's return in podcast form. He is so funny and has me cracking up with his one-liners. Also, don't know why 40% innovation is the correct amount.
Yeah.
Cleaning my toilet and kitchen is much better with all of you around. Say hi to the rest of the team for me. This podcast has unlocked a part of me that I thought I never had access to. Your influence on the community is much appreciated. And got me he, Kiwi guy from Aotearoa, who is scared of the gatekeepers, Jasper. Thank you, Jasper. Bart, would you like to say thank you?
I absolutely would. I was waiting for you to wrap it up.
Sorry.
Jeez. No, that's great. I've been enjoying it, and I've been enjoying all the what looks like support. At least the people, you know, and a lot of people reached out. And I'm glad. It's always nice to be appreciated. So know that we appreciate you too, because we couldn't do this without people who want us to. I think we'd know pretty quick.
Yeah, so. That would be funny if we had nobody listening to this and we're just doing it.
They're just not telling us.
Yeah.
There's somebody in the back office writing in listener mail.
Yeah.
it's going to crush Nolan.
I'm
going to
get in character as a guy from New Zealand.
How do they sing thanks and congrats? Ah, and got me. All right.
But seriously, thank you, Jasper.
Thank you, Jasper, very much
for your kind email. If you would like to send us an email, hit us up at passgas@donutmedia.com and we might read it on air. That was a nice one. I like that. Yeah. That's our show this week. Follow Bart at BidsBardo on Instagram. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Big thank you to our crew. We got Audrey on the ones and twos back there, and John? John's back there. Hey. He's up the camera. He's hanging out. He's off camera. You can't see him, but he's here. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.